Miami, July 5th and July 31st. Ice Cube's Big 3 is back at the Amerant Bank Arena. Featuring big stars like Dwight Howard, Joe Johnson, Lance Stephenson, and more. And featuring your home team, the Miami 305, led by Michael Beasley. Grab your tickets now at big3.com/tickets or Ticketmaster. Presented by iHeart.
Today's episode of The Beat is brought to you by the Waterworks and Header HVAC. Now better to serve you together and proud sponsors of Ohio State Athletics.
The first week of college football playoff prep has come and gone for Ohio State, and there's still another one until they even find out who they're playing in the Cotton Bowl. But we're going to get this one started the right way on a Monday with a Zach Boren Blitz on the Austin and Burm Show, brought to you by the Waterworks. Zach, what do the Buckeyes need to get done this week? Because they still don't even know if they're going to play Texas A&M or Miami yet.
You know, it's so interesting when you go into a college football playoff prep and you don't know who you're playing. You know, so much time during bowl season and obviously last year as well in a 12-team playoff, like they were playing in the first round, so they knew exactly who they were getting ready for. And this time, you almost have to treat it like spring ball, right? You go back to the basics. You go back, do good on good competition. You're pushing one another. You're doing a ton of situational work. Obviously, as we know, the Buckeyes are probably going to rep a ton of red zone stuff because that's where their biggest struggles have been. But it's a little bit of a new territory. This is the first time they've been in this position. First time where you're kind of looking at two teams and you're trying to figure out who you're going to play. Again, and I think Ryan Day would tell you and those coaching staff would tell you, they're just going to concentrate on themselves and try to get better each and every day.
Yeah, I thought that was interesting, Zach, because I talked to some people in the Woody. We were in there on Selection Sunday, talked to Julian Sayin on Wednesday of last week, and you know, there's coaches in there. The facility was buzzing still. And it's like, well, how much time are you going to devote? You have all this, you know, two-week window where you could get a jump start on scouting Texas A&M. You could lay the foundation to do that for Miami. Like, well, the team that we need to scout right now is Ohio State. So it was a lot of internal work there, as you mentioned. You're looking at areas that you can correct. What are your tendencies? And the way that they put it was, like, if Ohio State coaches were preparing to play Ohio State, how would they attack them? And as you mentioned, like, we know that they could start by breaking down how to be more efficient in the red zone. I wonder what you think the solution might be there.
Well, the red zone, I think you have to treat it just like the rest of the field. I mean, you look at the Buckeyes offensively and how efficient they are outside of the red zone. I think they rank towards the top of the country. You probably know better than I do from a statistics standpoint. But when you shrink down the field in the red zone, right, there's not as much field in there. You can't also shrink down your formations because all it does is put you all it does is handcuff you even more. And so what I would love to see, and I'm sure we're going to see it more come the playoff, is you get in the red zone, you keep the same style of offense that you're used to, right? You've got two or three wide receivers on the field. You're spreading people out. Yes, you're showing different formations, but you have to be able to stress the defense, even though, yeah, as a defensive player, the coaches used to always say, guess what? The field or the sidelines are your friend, whether that be the side of the field, whether that be the back of the end zone. So when you're starting to play in a smaller box, it's obviously harder to be more explosive because there's less field to play with. And so there's so much that the Buckeyes can do. There's so much more that the Buckeyes have shown in years past. And that's the most interesting thing to me, Austin, is, you know, when Ohio State in years past would get into the red zone, like we used to see a bunch of those bunch personnels, right? We saw it so much last year with Emeka and Carnell and Jeremiah, and they would try and do different releases just to create confusion. Like you have to do so many of those little things to stress the defense. And so it'll be interesting to see what happens, especially if Ryan Day is getting more involved in the play calling or the game planning, let's call it, with, you know, yeah, Brian Hartline doing way more things with USF. Does Ryan Day go back to that kind of philosophy instead of so much of 13 and 14 personnel?
I think we can all endorse that plan if that happens, Zach. I mean, I think I understand, you know, sort of the thought process that got Ohio State to that point with 13 and 14 personnel, but it wasn't like it just suddenly in a one-off that it didn't work against Indiana. It has not been the most efficient, effective way for Ohio State to operate in the red zone all year long. And I surely with that, I don't know if they even needed all week of scouting themselves to see that. That you'd hope that they didn't. But if they looked back at the entire of the duration of the season and a larger body of work, they'd be like, you know what? Having Jeremiah and Carnell on the sideline is probably not the most effective use of our personnel. And four tight ends, and we've said this a bunch, because I know that we've talked about it on a number of Monday Born Blitzes. Like, Nate Roberts is probably going to be a really good tight end at Ohio State. He is not the road-clearing fullback that needs to be out there if you're going to commit to that package. He's just not ready to do that.
The reason why Ohio State has been so successful is because they put players in position to succeed, right? They exploit guys' best attributes and put them in those positions. And when you look at Nate Roberts, and to your point, I'm a fan of Nate Roberts. I think he's going to have a tremendous career here. But Nate Roberts is not a fullback. Nate Roberts is not a road grader. Nate Roberts does not want to run 5 yards straight ahead and meet a linebacker in the middle of the hole. And to be quite honest, he's not built for that. And so they're not setting him up to succeed when they're putting him in that position. And all it's doing is hurting the offense, hurting the team. And you're seeing that. Now, it's not just Nate Roberts, obviously. There's a whole bunch of other things that are hurting them from that perspective. But you have to set guys up to succeed. And we saw it once in the Michigan game. And if you really want to fall in love with 13, 14 personnel and, go back to old school football, I'm for it. You're talking to the guy who loves that style of football, right? But here's the thing. You saw it once in the Michigan game. They put Caden McDonald back there, and the dude absolutely clobbered a linebacker. And guess what, Austin? That guy wasn't on the field the rest of the game. He knocked him out. He was done. Yeah. So that is a bowling ball type of player, right, that can run downhill and wants to get kind of dirty inside a phone booth. And so let him do that. You obviously can't do that every play, but that's setting someone up to succeed. And so you have to self-scout that. We've already talked about it. Putting Nate Roberts back there is not ideal. Now, if you want to get Nate Roberts on the field and, because you think he's going to bring more than a Bennett Christensen or in 12 personnel, you think Nate Roberts is a better blocker than one of your other tight ends, Max Clair, for example, then do it. I don't think that's a bad thing. But to put him back there at fullback and expect him to kick out a D end or blow up a linebacker in the hole or do those things, like, that's not what he's made to do. And so I think you're going to see Ohio State do a lot more of what they used to do, spread the field. Heck, it was just last year, Austin, and who knows if they'll show it. I mean, it keeps on getting brought up that Julian Sain is way more athletic than what people give him credit for. And Ryan Day's even been on record for that. So Austin, worst comes to worst, go four wide. Like you saw Ohio State do it all the time last year, spread people out and run quarterback leads, right? CJ Donaldson is a tough, hard-nosed guy. Let him be the lead blocker and run quarterback's leads. If you really want to, run the ball inside the tackles down at the goal line.
Yeah. I mean, I think you talked about, putting in Caden McDonald up in the big house. I mean, we also saw a really great concept, effective concept with Brandon Ennis and Max Clair working in the slot and putting linebackers in a blender and scoring a touchdown. They used it twice on that one scoring drive. They also had it on third down conversion. Like, I think that goes back to what you're saying about just running your normal offense no matter where you are on the field. I know that that becomes a lot more complicated, but I think Ohio State is also making it more complicated than it needs to be.
100%. The only thing that you're not doing is, guess what? You're not throwing the ball 50 yards down the field in the red zone. We get that, right? But just because you can't stress people vertically doesn't mean you can't stress people horizontally, right? How many times have we seen mesh routes work for Ohio State? I mean, heck, it was a staple there for the long – I think it was Marvin's staple route, right? The mesh route. I mean, he was – elite at that. And you've seen it time and time again. Heck, you've seen Jeremiah, right, be great running across the middle of the field. Brandon Ennis is great in the slot and getting into the inside. So, like, there are so many things that you can do stretching a defense horizontally and stressing them that you don't need to, people are going to be like, well, you know, it's not the normal offense. It is the normal offense. It's just different play calls, right? It's the same thing of there's certain play calls that you're going to call on third and one in your normal offense on the 50-yard line compared to, you know, first and five from the 5-yard line, you know, in the red zone. Like, there are so many – the book that they have of plays and options that they can go to in those situations are endless. And so they just need to realize, like, hey – we stress defenses way more by having our athletes on the field, not taking them off.
Yeah. No, I think that's a key part of the prep. And we want to make sure that your holiday prep includes plumbing, drain, and furnace readiness. Call the Waterworks and Header Heating, Cooling, and Plumbing, your single source for home care services. They are standing by to take your call right now. 614-232-2222 or visit online at thewaterworks.com. So when you think about those, that planning, that self-scouting, Zach, we've probably beat the red zone into the ground. What else is out there? This is still a team that was undefeated during the regular season. They don't have a ton of problems. We were calling it nitpicking. Are there things that still come to mind for you? Maybe not glaring problems, but something that if you're going to play Texas A&M or Miami and then maybe Georgia after that, or get a rematch with Indiana, that have to be on the to-do list this week?
Well, I think most definitely if you're facing Texas A&M and then you're facing Georgia and then you're facing Indiana, there's one thing on the defensive side of the ball that I think they need to shore up. And it showed its head in the second half against Illinois, and it showed its head again in the Big Ten championship game against Indiana. And that's defending that RPO style of play, right? We've seen it where Ohio State is so good defensively and they attack all the time. Well, when an offense is stressing you with quarterback reading it, right? We saw this so many times on third down against Indiana where they'd convert, where Mendoza's reading the defensive end collapse on the running back. Mendoza can either keep it or you've got some kind of flat option or wide receiver coming over the middle. And so it's actually a triple option when you really look at it. It hurt Ohio State against Illinois. It hurt Ohio State against Indiana. And, you know, yes, they only give up 13 points. I get it. What I'm saying is those crucial, crucial third down conversions that Indiana had to extend those drives were basically just off those RPO triple option type of plays. And Texas A&M is going to make a living on that, right? Marcel Reed is super athletic. That is a big part of their offense. You get to Georgia, Gunnar Stockton, not the most elite offense, but guess what? They've went to kind of that RPO style of play because Gunnar Stockton is a versatile quarterback, not great throwing the ball down the field, but efficient in the intermediate passing game. And obviously, if you win that and you're playing a Oregon or Indiana in the national championship game, that's a big part of their offense. And we know that. And so it's not like Ohio State is failing miserably at defending those plays or it's a huge red flag, but those plays have hurt them in crucial situations. And so, especially in the college football playoff, when every drive, every play is obviously magnified to a huge level, like you have to be able to get off the field in those situations. So they're going to look at that, whether that be defensive ends not crashing and taking the quarterback, which we've seen a lot. So then they're forced to hand the ball off. And then guess what? Let the linebackers play inside. Let the defensive linemen play inside. That's something that I know we used to adjust to all the time, just because you want to make it an automatic give. Because then the linebackers know, like, hey, listen, I don't have to play the run and then get out to the quarterback. And so there's so many different things that you can do to defend that style of play. But it'll be interesting to see the adjustments Ohio State makes.
We've got, Zach, a number of questions about like Arvel Reese and, you know, the statistical output, what he's doing down the stretch, and why does it feel like he's not making the same impact that he did earlier in the season. And I think, you know, watching every snap, it's like you still feel Arvel Reese out there and offenses still have to account for him. It's not just showing up in the box score in the same way that it did earlier in the year. But, you know, since we haven't had, you know, Buck IQs throughout this year, we haven't been tracking all that defense from week to week. Do you feel like there's been any, I don't know, dip in the output from Arvel Reese, or why is there not that concern for you?
So that's a little bit of a loaded question. So so do I think there has been a drop in production? Yes, because, you know, you look at statistically the tackles, the TFLs, the quarterback pressures, the sacks. Yes, there has been a drop. Now, in saying that, opposing coaches will tell you Arvel Reese's presence is still felt on the field, very much so. One thing that teams are doing to keep Arvel and Sonny at bay, and I know as a linebacker, I used to absolutely hate it, is that RPO style of play. And the whole reason why is because you're almost having two reads, right? Unless there is a certain call that you are making and everyone's on the same page from that, the reading and reacting style of defense, that when that play is ran, like as a linebacker, you can't bail on the run. So you're sitting on the run. And then as soon as you realize, like, hey, he didn't give the ball off, now you're going off to the quarterback. Well, by that point, you got offensive linemen in your face. By that point, guess what? The quarterback's got a lot of space from you playing at 5 yards in depth to the quarterback rolling out. And then at that point, guess what? He's either getting a run of 5, 6, 7, 8 yards down the field, or he's throwing the football and you're nowhere to be found, right? And it goes back to the exact style of play that we were just talking about, that Ohio State needs to be a little bit better defending at. Well, guess what? That's how you slow down linebackers, because now they can't play downhill so quickly. Now they have to have much more of a read and react type of mindset. And when that happens, guess what? You slow those guys down, right? Yeah. And I think teams are game planning against Arvel, and it's a very good game plan. And I think when Ohio State is going to that five-man front, when Arvel is down, teams can check, right? They can check play. So what happens when they do that? A lot of times they're running away from him, right? They know how great he is at the point of attack. So they're running away from him, doing different things. And it's something where Ohio State hasn't had to truly get him involved to be a game changer. As you've seen down the stretch, Ohio State defense been dominating. Now, again, it goes back to the self-scout of how's Matt Patricia and this Ohio State defense going to get Arvel more involved? Is it, playing him more in space outside of the ball? Is it, instead of getting him down on the line of scrimmage, is it, you know, sitting him in the middle way more, running different blitz packages with them in the middle instead of letting them rush the passer as more of a defensive end style of player? Like, there's so many different things that they can do to get him more involved, and I think you're going to see that. I also think they're going to do the same thing with Caleb Downs, right? Because the biggest takeaway I got from the Big Ten Championship game was, hey, Caden Curry and Sonny Styles were felt, but Arvel Reese and Caleb Downs, who are arguably the two best players on the defense side of the football, weren't really felt in that game. And so how does this Ohio State defensive coaching staff get them more involved, whether it be blitz packages, whether it be get Caleb more involved in the box? Like, there's so many different things that they can do.
Yeah, it's going to be a big month for that. It's also going to be a big week or couple weeks, because the other thing that we've sort of, you know, honed in on throughout this year on the beat presented by Waterworks and on a Born Blitz on a Monday is right guard in that situation. It doesn't sound to me, Zach, like Tegra Shibola will be able to play. He's been working through an injury. And I think maybe that explains some of the inconsistency that we've seen there from the veteran offensive lineman. But I don't think, my understanding is that he will play in the Cotton Bowl. So, you know, we saw Gabe Van Sickle make the most of those snaps that he got against Indiana. Josh Padilla should be a healthier version and maybe an option by the time you get to Dallas and on the practice field in the Woody right now. So that's a key spot. We saw Ohio State have to deal with these injuries throughout that college ball playoff run a year ago, and it looks like they will be again.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, you hurt for Tegra, right? Going through an entire season. And then the college football playoff run is, you know, what players work all year for. Like, this is it for them. And so you feel bad for the kid, all the work he's put in, not being able to capitalize on playing in these games. But on the flip side, man, you look at this Ohio State offense and you look at Josh Padilla and Gabe Van Sickle, and it's hard to think that Ohio State, like, they might be better off from that standpoint. It just because of the way that the offense is starting to operate in a way of the running game, the passing game. It might fit Josh Padilla and Gabe Van Sickle a little bit more than Tegra, right? Tegra is a big dude who likes to play in a phone booth and lean on dudes. Well, as the year's gone on and you've seen Bo Jackson and Isaiah West come on and you've seen, you know, them obviously Julian Sain in the passing game go to play at an elite level. Like, sometimes those guys that are a little bit more athletic on the offensive line are better suited for that style of offense. And I think Josh Padilla and Gabe Van Sickle, everyone will tell you, are more athletic than Tigger Shibola. And the issues that Indiana gave Ohio State with all of the stunts from the defensive linemen, all the twists from the defensive linemen, those are things that Tegra struggles with mightily. And it's an athleticism standpoint, whereas in Josh Padilla and Gabe Van Sickle are much better suited for that. And I think you saw that in the second half when there were zero sacks given, the pressures dropped drastically. And when you start looking at Texas A&M, you start looking at Georgia, obviously Indiana again, like those defensive fronts are very athletic. Yes, they're big dudes, but they are athletic dudes. And so I think inputting Josh Padilla or Gabe Van Sickle might be a better option for this Ohio State offense.
It sounds like the way you've talked about this, Zach, you think that Texas A&M would be the tougher matchup for Ohio State. Is that right?
No, not that I think they're the tougher matchup. The only reason why I keep on bringing up Texas A&M is because I think it's extremely hard to play on the road in the playoff. We saw it last year. Teams going on the road in those kind of atmospheres, and Kyle Field is a wild place. And so there's a lot of distractions with Miami, man. The way the season ended, the college football playoff, them getting in over Notre Dame, you know, them having to defend themselves. It's just a lot of distractions rather than Texas A&M has known really since what, week 10, that they were going to be in the college football playoff, whether they were going to have a bye or not a bye, right? Like, they knew. And so I just think going into that game, it's going to be really hard for Miami. Talking to you offline, and I'll say it online, I hope Ohio State plays Miami. That's the matchup that I want. And not because I think Miami is a worse team. Actually, I would argue, I think Miami's probably a better team than Texas A&M. You look at what Texas A&M has done this year in their resume and their lack of schedule in the SEC. I think Miami's the better team, the more dangerous team, I would say. I want Ohio State to play them because I despise Miami. I think Miami's one of those teams that most of the issues we have in college football and why a players union is needed and why a collective bargaining agreement is needed to put guidelines in place. A lot of those reasons are because of Miami. And you interview many general managers or coaches throughout college football, not at Miami, and they'll tell you, they'll point the finger, Miami is one of the top three of why there's issues. So I would love for Ohio State to get to get their shot at Miami and be able to say, hey, listen, you guys might think you're the big dogs, but you aren't up to the big dog level yet. But I'm just saying, in general, I think Texas A&M is a really good team. I think Miami is a really good team. I think both of them have athletes across the board, as we know that, because both of them recruit really, really well. Both of them are big-time programs. I was just throwing Texas A&M because I think Texas A&M is going to win that football game.
Makes sense to me. We're going to get to find out on Saturday. Believe that is the first game on Saturday of that triple header at noon. So we will certainly be watching that closely. I know Zach Bourne won't be able to turn that game off or any college football playoff game off, but we'll be, you know, getting that scouting evaluation from Zach when we get back here next Monday on a Bourne Blitz to kick off that week. A little closer to the holidays, but busy week, busy time for the Buckeyes, even without knowing that opponent yet, but they will find out soon enough. And we will break that down and so much more when we get back here on the Austin and Burn Show. For Zach, I am Austin. Thanks for joining us. We'll talk to you later.
Miami, July 5th and July 31st. Ice Cube's Big 3 is back at the Amerant Bank Arena. Featuring big stars like Dwight Howard, Joe Johnson, Lance Stephenson, and more. And featuring your home team, the Miami 305, led by Michael Beasley. Grab your tickets now at big3.com/tickets or Ticketmaster. Presented by iHeart.